Good afternoon. So after these great presentations, and they gave us sort of a nice framework for sort of extreme beverage, there links to obesity. I'm going to get kind of specific now and talk about a qualitative study that we've started that looks at overweight Latino youth in Los Angeles and their consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages in the home. First, I'd like to thank my co-authors, Laura Bogart, who's the PI on this study, Andrea Sharma, who's from the CDC, my very talented RA, who did a lot of this work, Guadalupe Mota, and Mark Schuster, who's our senior partner from Harvard Children's Hospital. So I have no relationship to disclose. So to give a little background, and I purposely kept this brief because I figured we'd have covered this already, but we know from NHANES that calories from sugar-sweetened beverages has been increasing for children over time. And we've seen even greater increases among minority youth. So adolescents, which is the focus of our study, both African-American and Latino youths have increased their consumption from sugar-sweetened beverages to almost 300 kilocalories a day, while we haven't seen a significant increases among white children. As we made a case for today, increased sugar-sweetened beverage consumption is associated with weight gain and obesity risk in longitudinal studies, and our experimental interventions are suggesting that decreased sugar-sweetened beverage consumption may lead to reductions in BMI. Looking specifically at Latino youth, we know that both Mexican-American boys and girls are at risk for higher obesity levels than boys and girls in the general population. And from NHANES, we also know from the 2000-2004 version that about 71% of calories from SSBs are being consumed from the home versus other venues like fast food restaurants, vending machines, et cetera. So to give a little background in our study and our setting, our aims were to explore patterns of SSB purchasing, availability, and consumption amongst early generational Latino immigrant parents and their youth. So these are really first and second generation Latino families living in Los Angeles. We looked to examine social cognitive influences on their consumption, so cultural and social norms, perceptions, and self-efficacy to reducing sugar-sweetened beverage consumption. And we really wanted to investigate the home environmental facilitators for sugar-sweetened beverage consumption, what factors led to them purchasing these beverages and maintaining them in their homes. So our study utilized students in Los Angeles Unified School District. We recruited from two school-based clinics, one in a middle school, one in a high school, and then specifically through a middle school, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. But in general, 43% of LAUSD students are overweight or obese. And you can see the breakdowns by racial ethnic groups, with Latinos being the highest at 45%. And LAUSD clinics serve a low-income, diverse population, primarily African-American and Latino, and again, many of these are new immigrants. So I have two samples. Our clinic sample, our eligibility was based on them being between 11 and 18 years old, having a BMI that was greater than the 85th percentile for their age and gender, and that they reported drinking SSBs on 4 days in the prior week. And then the parents were screened, and if the parents acknowledged keeping at least one sugar-sweetened beverage in the home and that they were the one responsible for purchasing, they were included in the study. Our school sample was slightly different. These were seventh graders, 14 years old, so a little younger than the earlier group. Again, same BMI. Through a survey I'll talk about in a second, they had consumed one SSB prior to the day before an interview. They were Latino or Latina, and their parents presently were keeping, again, one sugar-sweetened beverage in the home, and they were responsible for purchasing the beverages. Our recruitment at the clinic staff worked through a nurse and nutritionist. They screened participants for us through their measurements of height and weight. If they met the BMI standards, they were referred to us, and our study staff screened them and got consent for parents and children and assent for minor children. Our school sample was included through a randomized control study that we're doing on an obesity prevention program. Through the control school and this baseline survey, we're able to identify students that met the BMI requirements. We used stadiometers and electronic scales to measure height and weight ourselves for that study, so we knew that the BMI was valid. And then we looked at the race, ethnicity, age, and SSB consumption through the survey. And then through there, we had phone numbers, and these participants in the randomized control trial had, some of them had acknowledged that they could be contacted for future studies, so we reached out to them and screened them. So through these processes, we ended up with a sample of 54 overweight youth and 55 parents. 89% of the parents were interviewed in Spanish, and 17% of the youth. The middle school sample had 29 adolescents and 31 parents, higher proportion of boys to girls in that school. The clinic sample, 25 youth and 24 parents, and a more equal sample of boys and girls. And the numbers don't totally match up. In some of the dyads, we were only able to get a hold of the parent, interview the parent, or just the child's. But a majority of them, we were able to interview both the parent and the child from the same household. So to go into our methods a little bit, we used a qualitative, semi-structured interview with both the parents and the children. Majority of them were done over the phone, but some of the families we did interview directly in the clinic. And the results I'm going to present today are really from the qualitative aspects of the study. We did also collect data on every drink they consumed, when, where, with whom, and we're in the process of evaluating that data right now, and we'll share that in the future. The child's protocol asked questions about what they perceived to be healthy drinks and unhealthy drinks, not necessarily what they drank, but then we did ask them what they drank, and for each beverage, we asked for the frequency and the reasons for consumption, social norms involved with those choices, and the conditions around them when they consumed them, and the availability in the home. We asked them about ideas for stopping consumption and also barriers that were in place for preventing them, their exposure to advertising, and then rules that existed in the home and consequences of them breaking those rules around sugar-free beverage consumption. For the parents, they were asked a similar set of questions, but we were asking the parents now to also report on the child's consumption. So something we hope to do down the road is really to compare the perceptions of the parents and what the children were reporting they were drinking. We asked them about factors in influencing their purchasing of these beverages for their children, and then what types of programs and interventions might work to help them reduce consumption. And we also recorded a home checklist. We had them go through and basically give us an inventory of everything that was currently in their home. And we were also looking at all beverages. So we pulled out the sugar-sweetened beverages, but we wanted to see everything that was available. We used thematic qualitative analysis for this portion of the data. We explored the processes, mechanisms, barriers, and facilitators regarding the purchase, availability, and consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. We had initially two study investigators, one of which was myself, read through transcripts and develop a coding scheme. We then had three coders identify texts related to these themes using Atlas, TI, a great software program. Disagreements were discussed, and we sort of moved forward with a final code book, and then we did Cohen's Kappas on 15% to look for consistency among our coders. We had many sub-themes within each of these main six themes, but here's aggregates of our Kappa scores, which range from 60% to 84% for our six main themes. So now to get into some results. Healthy beverages across the board were thought of things that were natural. That's a term that came up a lot, and these are things like fruit juice and homemade culturally specific drinks. And I think that's an area with this population where we probably don't see a lot in SSB literature, whether they were purchasing horchatas or aguas frescas or making them in their home. In many cases, we learned that these aguas frescas had a lot of sugar being added to them, even though there was fresh fruit and water in them as well. And then water was also thought of as a healthy beverage. Unhealthy beverages were things that were unnatural, so things like tap water, energy drinks, regular and diet soda, and then also things that they perceived had added sugar, fat, and calories, so energy drinks, and again, soda. Now, we saw different levels of knowledge and misconceptions about drinks among this group, and one of the ones that really stood out was parents and children really felt that sports drinks like Gatorade were a healthy choice. You know, parents said things like Gatorade is not harmful because it doesn't have that much sugar. Water, Gatorade, juice don't have sugar. That's what makes them healthy, the children said. Parents and children also believed that diet soda was actually worse for them than regular soda. A parent shared their feelings about diet soda. I think regular Coke is actually less harmful than diet soda. Diet is more harmful because it has a lot of additives and the sugars they use are even more refined and they have more chemicals. I wouldn't convince my child to change to diet. She should stay with the regular. So very telling for, you know, trying to get an intervention in this population. And the children sort of mimicked the parents' messages of, well, I heard that diet soda is worse than like regular soda. Parents and children both felt that tap water was unhealthy, and we really traced this a lot back to their countries of origin and what was going on with the water there. Many of them mentioned having chlorine, and the kids translated that as Clorox in the water, so it was something unhealthy. Tap water has chlorine, other things. I don't think that such water is clean or purified. It could be harmful to your health, and I prefer not to buy it. I prefer to buy it. And then again, the child saying, my mom says tap water has Clorox, so we don't drink it, and it tastes bad. Now, looking at facilitators to SSB consumption, parents and other family members bought SSBs and did keep them in their home. So here's some children's perceptions of sort of when they were asking for these beverages. Last Friday, I asked my dad to buy me Monster, and he did. My mom buys Kool-Aid, and she tells me to make it, and then we all drink it. And then why do you drink soda? Because it's the only thing that's kept in our house. Now again, remember, these are all children that are overweight and obese. Many of them are in the clinics being treated for this and seeing a nutritionist. Overwhelmingly, parents purchase filtered water to be consumed in the home, tracing back to their reservations about tap water. So we saw across the board that they were going out and filling up 5-gallon jugs at water stations or buying water for the homes. The filtered water here, I have it at home, it's in the kitchen, so that's really where the water is accessible to these families. Now, barriers to reducing consumption. Many parents did not have rules regarding SSB consumption. You know, one parent said, we don't have specific strict rules. I just scold them and tell them not to drink so much. Another parent says, my son consumes them because they're there, acknowledging the access. So I have to replace them. There isn't any way I can make him stop from drinking. I can't prohibit him. So I mean, how can I say, no, he can't drink it? And then the child acknowledges, my mom doesn't really keep tabs on us, so there's no rules. So they can sort of do what they want. Now, some parents did have rules limiting SSBs, but when we looked at these limits, again, remembering this is children that are obese, parents states, when it comes to drinking soda, we just limit it to one at lunch and one in dinner instead of continual throughout the day. And the child says, you know, I can only drink soda at lunch, one glass or one or two glasses. So again, you know, in my opinion, these are high limits to be setting for these children. And when parents did have rules, they really acknowledged that there weren't consequences to breaking them. When we asked parents about suggested programs to help reduce sugar-sweetened beverage consumption, they really felt that schools were the place that this should be done, programs to teach children about nutrition and encourage them to drink fewer. But parents did acknowledge that they needed to stop providing them in the home, yet we just did not really see this in what they were talking to us about. So to go to summary, many participants thought, for example, that soda was unhealthy. However, they continue to buy them and provide them in their home and allow their children to drink them. And parents seem to think that soda was okay. It was okay, but just not in excess. And then both parents and children had misconceptions about SSBs. Again, going back to the sports drinks are healthy. To a different group I work with, we found it was interesting that a lot of pediatricians for this population especially will prescribe Gatorade in lieu of Pedialyte as an inexpensive way to help with dehydration. And I think we saw some of this being carried forward as well. In that instance, it's healthy. So it's a healthy drink. So it's become part of sort of our norm. Parents and children believe that tap water is dirty and contaminated. So they were really seeking out other sources for their water. We saw a few rules about SSB consumption, and the limits really varied. Example, it's okay if they have a couple of sodas a day. And we really saw limited parenting skills and lack of knowledge about really how to discipline children and how to address these issues and few consequences for the children when these rules were broken. So implications for interventions, which is sort of why we started doing this research and we look to work with these clinics to address some of these issues with these populations, is really starting to address some of the harmful effects of SSB consumption and developing programs that improve on parent-child communication about these issues and allow them to hopefully address them as a family. So if you have any other questions, I'd be more than happy to respond to emails.